welcome to episode 11 of Checking the Gate of Film and Religion Podcast. I am Robert Wright Sasko.
And with him, as always, is co-host Michael M. Patty. Today, since this is episode 11, we thought we'd do something a little different and talk about Spinal Tap, which goes up to 11. Has absolutely no religious content at all, but the number is significant, and so we're going to discuss the religion of numerology.
Well, didn't Spinal Tap do a religious album?
I don't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Well, actually, today we're going to start...
Today we're discussing the 1982 sci-fi romp Blade Runner, starring Harrison Ford, Rutger Hauer, and Sean Young.
And in our TV corner, we're going to be discussing the recent reboot of Battlestar Galactica that was on in the aughts.
Co-starring Blade Runner cast member Edward James Olmos.
Yes. He seems to be in anything with androids and replicants and...
I'm going to say this right out front. They call them androids in the book, but that's a little misnomer. An android is like Lieutenant Commander Data from Star Trek The Next Generation, or C-3PO. It's a mechanical humanoid. The beings in Blade Runner and Battlestar Galactica are artificial carbon-based life forms. They are not mechanical. So I think the change from calling them androids to replicants is apt, and replicant is just a cool word.
So what's a robot? Is that like a mindless automaton that's
yes.
in human shape?
Yes, the things that... No, not in human shape. That's an android.
Okay.
A robot, they have robots in real life that help build cars.
Okay,
you know, anything
yeah.
that's programmed to do the same thing over and over again is a robot. An android is a mechanical human. There is no word for artificial humans like... in Blade Runner or the Cylons, like replicants.
Skin job?
Right. Exactly. That word is used in both of these.
Yes.
By the way.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to that, the use of that word later, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I want to start out this episode. We actually got a comment on our last episode on Facebook.
Wow. Somebody heard our last episode?
Yeah.
Top notch.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of you guys out there, so we wouldn't mind if... you either reply it on the Facebook or through Twitter at CTG Podcast, twitter.com.
Yes, please speak up, because otherwise Robert and I are just doing this for our own enjoyment.
Yeah, let us know what you think. You can also email us at, what is our email address?
CTGpodcast@yahoo.com.
There we go. So my friend Tim Sayer posted this on Facebook about our last episode on Paul and how we were talking about creationism versus evolutionism.
Wasn't it specifically a comment of mine where I was talking about how believing that the eye must have been created by God because a human couldn't do it was a fallacy because God is infinitely more powerful than a human anyway?
Right, right. And here's Tim's comment on maybe that specifically and the whole episode in general. He said, humans like to squish God into their magical box of, quote, God can be only as smart as I am, and whack him with their magical stick of, quote, God has to be as dumb as me. The packaging and subsequent whacking of our theology is our greatest problem. Good episode, he says. So thank you, Tim, for
thank you.
Letting us know what you think. By the way, I'd like to plug... my friend Tim is a pilot, and his wife, Maya Sayer, is an actor. She's recently in the George Clooney movie, The Ides of March. She also stars in a web series called 8 and 5, about a detective who has surrogates, they call them in the show, but basically clones, replicants. So it kind of fits in with our theme here today. She also has a blog called Down and Nerdy, which she talks about all the kind of geeky things that cross her path and from a woman's perspective, which we're seeing more and more geeks and nerds of the female persuasion, which is kind of nice.
While we're plugging things, I'd also like to give a shout out to Matt, a.k.a. Big Hungry from Cinefilter.com, who also does the Cinefilter podcast, for inspiring the Blade Runner portion of this episode. It was his idea. I didn't want to do it, but he talked me into it, and I think we actually have some very interesting points to discuss, so thank you, Matt.
Well, first, earlier this month, we had some news about Blade Runner. Some actual news. from comingsoon.net.
It's rumor news, but after 27 years, take what you can get, right?
Right. From comingsoon.net, starting February 5th, the headline was, Harrison Ford is in talks for Blade Runner sequel.
Uh-huh.
And then on the comingsoon.net story dated February 6th, Harrison Ford rumors are false.
Wait, what? All of the Blade Runner sequel news is directly correlated to all of the Prometheus news, since Ridley Scott has come up with what is clearly a, if not a prequel, then it definitely takes place in the same universe as Alien. Then obviously the next three words out of everybody's mouth are going to be Blade Runner 2. I don't know how I feel about that. Obviously, Harrison Ford's not going to be in it. He's going to be busy making Indiana Jones 5 when this is being made.
Let's not start that again, please.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Indiana Jones 4.
So, when was the last time you watched Blade Runner, Mike?
I saw half of it a couple of weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, I think. AMC was having a 30th anniversary showing, and I watched up until the point where he first infiltrates Taffy Lewis's gentleman's club and meets Zora for the first time. And then I rewatched the rest of it yesterday.
So how did you feel about watching it again? What was your general physical reaction?
Well, I have to interject at this point. I am physically incapable of staying awake through Blade Runner. Since the first time I saw it in approximately 1998... I had a professor who showed it in a class, and I started dozing off during it. And then I purchased it because I do genuinely like the movie. It puts me to sleep every single time. I think the only time I have ever made it through in its entirety was when I watched it first thing in the morning once. That was it. that is not why I had to watch it. That is not why I had to watch it in pieces. Something else was coming on, and I turned it off.
But, you know, this movie, it does move kind of slow. It definitely has...
The final cut helps that.
Yeah.
But if anybody's listening who's familiar with Blade Runner, it has four different versions. They're all pretty much the same. There are a few big differences, but for the purpose of what we're going to be discussing, all the thematic stuff is the same.
Yeah, basically the difference between the original theatrical version and, like, the final cut is the absence of the...
There was a voiceover in the theatrical cut, and what the final cut does is, and the director's cut added in a unicorn scene that is supposed to be what Harrison Ford is thinking about, and they imply that he's a replicant. We'll discuss that later.
Yeah.
And the voiceover is gone in every subsequent version, and I don't miss it. And the final cut tightens up some of the editing where the narration was taken out. It fixes with CG some visual errors. There's clearly a stunt woman in one scene, and the actress came back and reshot the part, and so now that's put in.
They got Harrison Ford's son to come in and
reloop some lines so it actually matched what was being spoken in the dialogue.
Right. Well, no. Yeah. They filmed his mouth
re-looped
saying the lines.
Reloop is the wrong word. I'm sorry.
Yeah. They filmed his mouth and CG'd his son's mouth onto Harrison Ford's face in the movie. Just little things like that. That when you watch it once, it's like, oh, that's kind of cool. But
in the scene where the dove flies away at the end, the shot of the sky now matches the rainy environment.
Yeah,
that
it's
never did before.
It's like a blue sunny California day for like 3 seconds and
and then they cut back to Harrison Ford and it's still raining.
Yeah.
But the themes about what it means to be human, what it means to create life, all of those are still present in all versions, and so that's what we're going to be talking. It doesn't matter which one you watch, it'll still be pertinent.
Think, for example, the replicants and their... We meet four, well, five in the movie, but
yes.
The four that originally escaped.
Only five.
Only five. Not six.
Not six.
Yeah, I think they might fix that in the final cut, too.
It is fixed. I think it was fixed in the director's cut.
Yeah, there is some ambiguity as to how many...
And it wasn't supposed to be ambiguous. They just screwed up.
Yeah, it was like there was...
Well,
six replicants escaped. One got fried, and then there's four that he's chasing.
Yeah,
who's
that's
the fifth one? Is that Rick
that's
Deckard?
What it was. But, no, it's
yeah.
All right, let's get this out of the way before we go further. There is no way Deckard is a replicant because there's no way the police would be using a replicant to hunt down other replicants because replicants are illegal. That's why they want him to go after Rachel. If he was a replicant, he would be retired.
But maybe that's why they have Gaff hanging around to stick around. Who better to do this dirty work than another replicant? Because that's what they made replicants to do, all the stuff that they didn't want humans to do.
It's ridiculous. It only makes sense to Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
If he's a replicant, the whole movie breaks down. It's pointless.
Harrison Ford also said he didn't like that at all because the point of his character was he gains his humanity back by the end of the movie.
Right.
After he's been, you know, years and years of just slaughtering the replicants, but to him, you know, it's like, you know, killing people. And he realizes that, and that's dehumanizing him.
Right. They make a point, especially in the voiceover and the theatrical version, that the use of the term skin job is racist. I'm not going to make the quote here because this is a family podcast, and this is an R-rated movie. But there's a bit in the voiceover that the chief, played by M. Emmett Walsh, calls the replicants skin jobs, and it's a racist term. And I can't believe they wouldn't be using a replicant. They make it very clear replicants are illegal on Earth. So either the police don't know, which doesn't make sense because they admit that he needs some of the old Blade Runner magic. So obviously he's been a Blade Runner for a long time and more than 4 years. It's like, this is what I'm talking about. It doesn't make sense if he's a replicant.
Right, and when he's in the briefing, he's first learning about the Nexus 6 models. He hasn't gone up against this kind of replicants before because as his chief is describing how they have memories and stuff, this is like news to Deckard. He's like, wow, this is something I haven't gone up against before in my life. So Harrison Ford cannot be this advanced model of a Nexus 6 if he hasn't, you know, it doesn't make sense.
No. Except to Ridley Scott, but...
So yeah.
He thinks it's ambiguous. I think it's clear as day that he's not a replicant, unicorn dream scene aside.
Yeah. Plus, Deckard has a calmness, a maturity about him that the replicants don't have. They're really depicted as innocents who've been thrust into this very dirty, corrupt adult world. You know, they're sort of like toddlers, four-year-old children. They all, especially Rutger Hauer's performance really portrays that. That sort of carries over to the other replicants, and you can really see that sort of immaturity, you know, the kind of way they play around, and that's what makes it sad and tragic when you look at Roy Batty's character. He's a four-year-old child in a full-grown man's body, and that's what makes it tragic that Harrison Ford has to gun him down mercilessly as part of his job.
I think all of the replicants are fantastic in this. There's great casting throughout. That's one of my big things about watching movies is the casts, and just somebody who is not good or is clearly not pretending in character, it just takes me right out of it. But when you get a bunch of people that just gel, even Harrison Ford and Sean Young, who hated each other by all accounts during the making of this movie, it all goes together, and I think that's one of the big selling points. Let's get back on topic about him having to gun these characters down. And this might even sort of be on topic for a religion. This is more like philosophy today.
Yeah.
There is visually no differentiation. They need to give the replicants an empathy test. That's the only way you can tell. So when you do shoot them, they bleed all over, and it's no different than shooting a real human being. I can't imagine it would be easy for a Blade Runner to have to get used to that.
Yeah, and that's a whole arc that Harrison Ford's character's gone on. He doesn't want to do it anymore. Yeah, he's really preoccupied with his own mortality as the replicants are. Because it took me just until like the last time I watched it to really hone in on that. Like, they keep playing the part where the other Blade Runner gets killed over and over again, and he keeps watching that. I'm like, why do they keep going back to this, you know, the same line, the same dialogue? I'll tell you about my mother, you know. And it's because he's really pondering his own mortality, his own death. He sees his expiration date coming up soon, and he's wondering if it's going to be at the hands of one of these replicants.
It gets really close a couple of times.
Yeah, especially at the end there.
Actually, pretty much all of them have his number, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, Leon almost gets him if it wasn't for Rachel sticking up behind him and shooting him in the back of the head.
Pris almost gets him.
Yeah. Rubbles rips his nose off.
Yeah. Zora tries running away. She would have killed him, but somebody else came in.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, she was choking him with his own tie.
That's right. If
I didn't see a whole lot of Blade Runner magic going on here.
No.
he's kind of lucky.
He's out of practice.
Yeah.
And then, spoiler alert, Roy saves him at the end. Roy is the one that ends up showing mercy.
Yeah, I think that's where we get a lot of religious imagery there. Like,
yes.
At the end, his body's starting to shut down.
Yeah. And what does he do to help himself keep going?
He takes a nail and puts it through the palm of his hand. A lot of Christ-like imagery there.
Yes.
And then he chases Harrison Ford through the attic of this building. You know, the Bradbury building, which they filmed this, was the same building that was used in a Twilight Zone episode called Demon with a Glass Hand, starring Robert Culp.
I haven't seen that one. It's not Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, so I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, no, Shatner's not in this one, Robert Culp.
Okay,
but
he's good too.
Yeah, but it's very interesting that he chose this place to shoot this part of the movie, because that Twilight Zone episode deals with a man who's being pursued by these people who are trying to kill him, and turns out he's an android, and he has this glass hand, which contains like the information of like all the DNA for the whole human race, and he's like responsible for the safety of the human race. So it's not until the very end of the episode that he realizes that he's an android.
Well, right, because it's the Twilight Zone.
Right. Dun, dun, dun. But because it's shot in the same place, and that's the setting for this Twilight Zone episode, that sort of lends itself to the theory that Deckard himself may be a replicant. The Blade Runner conspiracy theorists, you know, will use that as part of their reasoning as to evidence of Deckard's replicant nature.
You're all wacky. That's what I have to say to you.
But let's
talk a little bit more about Roy and the religious.
He's chasing him through the attic, and there's like all these pigeons there, and he grabs one of them, like a dove, actually. He's got a dove in his hand, which is a symbol for the Holy Spirit. As they fight and Deckard's trying to get away, he jumps over to the roof of another building and is holding onto a ledge. He's slipping, and Batty grabs him just as he falls and saves his life last minute. In the theatrical version, Deckard kind of muses about why he might have been saved. But I think the imagery speaks for itself. Is, you know, Batty dies, the bird flies up to the heavens. And
it's a little bit of a sledgehammer, but the voiceover is largely unnecessary, no more so than in this scene. And his soliloquy at the end there is phenomenal.
Yeah, his last lines are the best final words ever.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
Yeah. The cram is he's only got to live 4 years, and he's had an extraordinary life. Roy Batty has a scene with his creator, and they talk about this, and he's like, you know, just be grateful for what you had. And he wants more. I think we all feel that way. We all, you know, we can live 70, 80, 90, 100 years if we live right. But, you know, we always want more. That's part of our human nature. We want to live forever. We're scared of death. We are programmed to die just as surely as the replicants are.
Roy's quest in the movie is searching for his creator. He goes to the person who built his eyes. He's trying to find out the date of his creation so he knows exactly how long he lives. It's science fiction-y, but it's a metaphor for him looking for the answers and trying to find the meaning of his life and trying to extend it, but for the point of experiencing more of, because he's done so many phenomenal things that are incapable of being seen by humans. He would be crazy just to accept what he is and fall over dead in 4 years. And he finally does meet his maker, and they talk about what is it like to meet your maker. And he plain out states, "I want more life, Father." And it's that spiritual quest that it's as much Roy's story as Deckard's. Roy's trying to find his humanity as much as Deckard is.
Wow, well said.
Thank you. So, all right, well, let's stop talking and let the TV corner music play.
So we're going to start talking about Battlestar Galactica now in our TV corner. But I noticed that there's 5 points we have in common with Blade Runner and Battlestar Galactica.
Let's just rattle those off, shall we?
Number one, we have humans that are trying to discover the hidden androids. Through all four seasons, they're trying to find, you know, the Cylons. First, it was Cylons in the fleet, and then it's the final five Cylon, and then it was, who's the very last one? And then...
By that time, you were ready to stop wondering who the final Cylon was, let me tell you.
I was totally wrong. I thought it was Gata. Why was I wrong?
I was really hoping it was going to be both Tom Zarek and Captain Apollo, and that they were both the same model. No, I really thought that's what they were going to pull out, and they were going to tie the original series into the reboot, because... all of this has happened before, and all of this will happen again. It would have made so much sense.
No, that is brilliant, Mike. I wish you were a writer.
Well, when Brian Singer finally gets his reboot done, maybe he'll hear this and bring me on.
There you go. Let's see. Both star the fabulous Edward James Olmos.
I was reading a Battlestar Galactica reboot spinoff novel written by the fantastic Peter David. And at one point, Admiral Adama says Gaff's line from Blade Runner, "It's too bad she won't live, but then again, who does?" I had to put the book down and stifle a laugh because I was in public when I read that.
This is number three. Both use the term skin job.
Yes, they do.
It's one of Colonel Ty's favorite aphorisms there.
It is derogatory on Battlestar Galactica as much as it is in Blade Runner.
See, both have a bad guy with a penchant for Jesus imagery.
Is Baltar really bad?
He's slimy,
but he's not a villain.
He's in some characters' eyes, he is. It definitely, when he was on New Caprica, he was a bad guy.
I disagree. I think he was trying to help himself, but not the Cylons.
Did admit to Rosalyn, President Rosalyn, that he was, in fact, responsible for giving them the Cylons the codes for the destruction of the human race. So.
He didn't do it on purpose.
He didn't do it on purpose.
He did it to get some tail. That's not villainy.
That's worse than villainy.
That's just being a man.
If he had some noble cause... That it's just worse that he did it just because she was hot.
I agree he's not noble, but I... Okay, off topic.
All right, so, and then number five, both have controversial and debatable endings, both concerning a bird.
I don't think Blade Runner's ending is that controversial. I think it's misunderstood, especially by its own director.
Well, I'm specifically talking about whether or not Deckard is a replicant.
He's not.
Whether or not Starbuck is an angel.
She is. Oh, all right, that is controversial because a lot of people may not like it. I think it could have been set up a little better that she was otherworldly rather than just having her disappear.
I recently watched the fourth season again, and they do drop hints here and there, but it's so subtle that you forget about it. Like, if you're watching it on a week-by-week basis, you forget that sort of thing by the time you get to the finale.
I thought at the time that it aired that discovering your own dead body and having to burn it was going to become a meme, but it never happened.
Yeah, because that happens to everybody.
I can't tell you how many mics I've had to burn.
That last episode, they're flashing back to, like, before the Cylon Holocaust, and at that point where Starbuck disappears, Lee Adama, like, flashes back to where he had a bird caught in his house, and it flies out the window. But, yeah, there's tons of, you know, religious content in Battlestar Galactica. There's almost too much to talk about.
Yeah, we'll hit the big... It's because, I hate to use this word so much, it's very sledgehammery. They make a point of each side having their own religion. The colonists are polytheists. They believe in Hera and Apollo and the old...
Greek and Roman.
Okay.
They both... The Romans renamed them, but they're essentially the same gods, yeah.
While the Cylons are monotheistic and believe in God. It was kind of clear from the outset when they introduced that, and knowing that if the show ran long enough, they were eventually going to get to Earth, that the Cylons and humans would eventually come together,
yeah.
Considering the way things are on Earth today. So that was way to go, Ron Moore. Thanks for spoiling us.
Yeah. Well, that sort of settles the argument from our last episode. You know, is it creation revolution? We came from the stars and we're all half Cylon, half human.
There are those who believe that life here began out there. Thank you for the setup.
All right. This really tackles more like what it means to be in the image of God. This is a major theological concept, the imago Dei, being in the image of God, and what that means for us, that, you know, God created us in his image and breathed life into us. What happens when we create life?
Right. Is trying to create a new, in this instance, the Cylons, who are, you know, presumably the centurions, have some sort of sentience. Even though they just do grunt work, they can think for themselves and they eventually revolt. What does that say about humans? Are they trying to play God? Or is it just, let's see what we're capable of?
In their prequel series, Caprica, they discuss that, like the motivations of Daniel Greystone to make this model. First, it was that he wanted to make the Cylons a sentient weapon where they wouldn't have to send soldiers in, they could just send the robots. But then it became so much more, where he found his daughter had basically downloaded her personality and he was trying to find a vessel to put the consciousness of his daughter into this robot. And then I think by the end of the series, they figure out a way to resurrect her, like the Cylons in the Battlestar Galactica. But
I don't remember. Caprica was notable for being a lot of missed opportunity. It spent too much time focusing on the family politics and the business aspect than about his daughter being the first Cylon.
Yeah, it had an interesting religious angle where the followers of the one God were...
Oh, that's right.
...were terrorists.
That's right. They had fundamentalist warfare on there.
Yeah, where in Battlestar Galactica, the monotheistic Cylons seem more like Christians, especially Baltar, the way he reacts. He first starts out as a skeptic, and then he's sort of a prophet, where
he comes around to the Cylons' way, and eventually, by season four, he's sitting in a room spreading the word to all the people on the Galactica who would listen.
Yeah, he's a cult leader, a guru, a mad preacher. Baltar sees angels, and
he looks a lot like Jesus, too,
yeah,
with the long hair and the beard.
Especially when he's under that trial where he's falsely accused. It's like another famous person with long hair and a beard. What's really great about his character is he finally kind of learns to care at the end. He starts to practice what he preaches and not just say whatever he has to say to kind of squirm his way out of one situation or the next.
Yeah. Doesn't the phrase "the Church of Gaius Baltar" get mentioned at one time?
Yeah.
Like that's what he worships.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is when he realizes that Starbuck has come back to life, he starts preaching resurrection and people start thinking he's crazy, sort of like a certain Jew who lived 2,000 years ago. Another similarity was Saul Tai and his comparison with Saul of Tarsus. I didn't get this until I listened to another podcast on the SQPN network.
Explain to our listeners, such as myself, what that is.
Okay, Saul Tai. He was a soldier in the colonial fleet who is hell-bent on killing Cylons. Saul of Tarsus, he was a Pharisee, a Jew, and he was hell-bent on killing Christians until he became one of them. Same thing with Saul. He was killing Cylons until he realized he was one of them. When Saul of Tarsus became Paul, who wrote all the epistles in the New Testament, he was converted to Christianity when he was on the road to Damascus and had a vision of Jesus and was struck blind and then was healed from his blindness once he got to Damascus. Saul Tai, he was blinded in one eye by having it ripped out by the Cylons.
That's interesting. I'm wondering how much of that was thought out ahead of time. I had read somewhere that originally it was supposed to be Paul Tai, but they couldn't like there was something, somebody else in some other fiction that I'm not aware of had that same name, so they just changed it by one letter. And I'm wondering if maybe they didn't introduce a lot of that after the fact.
Yeah, it's very subtle. Like I said, I didn't really think about it until I listened to another podcast, and I was like, oh, yeah. That leads me to believe that it's so subtle that it was unintentional. And if you've listened to any of the podcasts or commentary that are on the Battlestar Galactica episodes, they're making this stuff up as they went along.
Clearly. That's especially the last two seasons.
Yeah.
After they leave New Caprica, I love the show. After they leave New Caprica, it really is all downhill.
Yeah.
If you watch it again from the beginning, now that it's been off for a while, seasons 3 and 4 don't hold a candle to the first two.
Well, my favorite episode is Crossroads Part 2, the season finale of season 3. That is fantastic storytelling.
Is that the end of the trial?
That's the end of the trial, okay. And where Starbuck comes back.
Okay.
That is like my favorite episode of TV ever, and it has that rockin' version of All Along the Watchtower at the end that Bear McCreary composed there. That is, I just love it. It just gets, it gets me riled up every time I watch it.
My favorite episode is Exodus Part 2, where they leave New Caprica, and the coordination that they put, it's the one where Ellen Tai dies at her husband's hand for betraying them.
Yeah.
It's the one where Adama makes a foolhardy attempt to take Galactica back to rescue the colonials that were stranded under Cylon rule, and they jump into the atmosphere, and that's just a cool shot.
When they free fall Galactica.
It's phenomenal. That's my favorite episode. It has nothing to do with religion.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Cylons, they thought they were following God's will. They said, this is God's will that we make peace.
Yes.
That's another thing that Christians try and do, is try and find out what God's will. And how do you do that?
It's not destroying 12 planets.
Yeah. Anytime you try and do God's will, you can't go against what he told you to do in the first place. Like, do not kill. So that's the sort of thing where you have to really be careful when you.
But in hindsight, if they hadn't committed all that genocide, none of us would be here right now.
That's right. It was God's will, you know?
So thank you, Cylons.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on Blade Runner?
I was wrong. I did the math wrong. This is the 30th anniversary because it came out in 1982. Happy birthday, Blade Runner.
All right. Yeah. Happy birthday. I think it's a great movie. I love the music. I love the cinematography.
I think it's a good movie.
But I have the same problem you do. It's very hard to stay awake. Once that synthesizer sax starts playing, it's the music of the sirens, man. I fall asleep.
I like how it created a world. Like I said before, I love the cast. I wish it was a little better paced, and the final cut is a little better paced. And it has some good themes to think about, which we have done so today.
Battlestar Galactica, I thought, was a fine show. I like how it ended. It had a finale, even though they might not have had a plan while they were writing it. Because they say,
to its detriment.
That's the opening words. The Cylons have a plan.
Yeah.
Too bad the writers didn't.
And
but
to quote Spinal Tap, that turned out to be a lie.
Yeah.
I'd also like to point out that there's also a series of books written by Dean Koontz, which are a modern-day take on Frankenstein, called Dean Koontz's Frankenstein. Each book has its own individual title. I read the first one of that, and while these will never be classics, they do cover a lot of the same themes. I've only read the first one so far, and it was okay. Not great, but I'm interested enough in the plot to keep reading. There's only 5 of them.
Yeah. Well, it does what, like I said before, what all good science fiction should do, is it should alert us to problems that are coming and how we need to kind of settle these things morally, ethically, and religiously. Maybe that would be a book that me and you could write, you know, about what would happen in the real world if replicants and androids and clones started showing up.
Oh my God, that's a great idea. What if we could do a whole series? What if it was real?
Yeah. Do you baptize them? Can they be part of the church? Can they take communion? There's religious ramifications that we have not considered. With all the controversies that are gripping the church today, imagine what would happen if that one hit.
Just imagine.
Well, as promised, we're going to continue with the replicant theme for next time, with the meta theme that traverses episodes We're going to be watching the newly reconstructed Fritz Lang masterpiece, The Complete Metropolis. Do not settle for any dollar store public domain release. Get the DVD or the Blu-ray that's released by Kino International, or Mike told me that you could find it on Netflix. Just search for Metropolis Restored and you can find the correct version. Trust me, you'll be glad you did. And in the TV corner, we're going to make long-suffering Mike suffer some more by examining the short-lived Battlestar Galactica prequel series Caprica, which we mentioned briefly just now. We're going to be examining it a little more in depth. We touched a little bit on some of the religious themes that we could find there. It is available on Blu-ray and DVD, and the entire series can also be streamed on Netflix. But if you just want to catch the pilot episode, which is split up into two parts on Netflix, that'll give you the gist of it. All right. Well, until next time, you could go to our website at www.ctgpodcast.com and download all of our old episodes. You can contact us, like we said before, on the Facebook at Checking the Gate Podcast. Send us an email at ctgpodcast@yahoo.com, or you could send us a tweet at twitter.com/ctgpodcast.
As always, this is Michael M. Patty saying peace out.
And this is Robert Wright Stasek saying keep the faith.